Thank you, Tanya. I've got to hit got it, so it'll keep going. My name is Rich Thayer. I'm part of a small consulting consultancy. And Julian and Kate and I agreed to put together a series of sessions on what does it take to be an independent consultant these days, from the mechanics through the contracting. And today, we're going to be talking about contracting, which is even before you begin serious negotiation, how do you arrange with your clients what you're going to do and how you're going to do it? So we have discussed at some length the format of these sessions. And what we've settled on is we would like to share our expertise, but we also recognize that many of you have as much or more expertise as we do. So we're going to be offering some advice, some suggestions. We then want to have a breakout, and it's not, it's not going to be small pairs to talk about this, that, and the other. It's going to be groups of four, hopefully, where you can share with each other what you thought about what we said, how you do it, and get some tips. We're going to come back, hear what you've come up with, and then share some of our tips also. But although we are experts in some ways, many of you are also experts. And across ODF, we'd like to share that expertise. So with that, I'm going to have my colleagues introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Kate Dixon, and I am an independent consultant. Have been I'm in my 13th year of doing indie consulting. I had my practice split. I did it for about 5.5 years when my kids were little, and I've been doing it for about 7.5 years, 8 years. Oh my gosh. In the last 8 years as well. So I'm actually a compensation consultant, but I'm on the advisory board here. And a lot of the work that we do in my practice is very adjacent to organization design. And so at any rate, I'm hoping that this will be of service to you today. And I'm going to hand it over to Julian to get us started with content.
Thanks, and hello everyone. My name is Julian Chender. I am not an independent consultant. I was once and probably will sometime in the future be again. But I currently work for Accenture in their operating model and organization design practice, where we face a lot of the same challenges that independent consultants face because we go to market in small teams with the strength of the firm behind us. So I think a lot of what we're talking about today and what I'll be sharing with you from my experience is from across both big consulting and independent. But I think if I had known it in either case, it would have been easier. So my hope is to share a little bit of how I think about contracting. And then we can talk about a few other things, do some breakouts, and then we'll close with some like top tips. So we'll be asking you in your breakouts to think about what are your top tips to share as well. So an overview of contracting. There's two parts to contracting for me. There's the conversation, then there's the document plus more conversations. So that is to say that a lot of times we think about contracts with clients, we think about how do I get to the scope of work or even the proposal as a first step. And my theory that I'm working with is that contracting really begins at first contact. When that email hits your inbox, when that phone rings, you are already contracting whether you're going to work with this person, how you're going to work with them. And actually, how you show up is setting boundaries and parameters to the engagement from that very beginning. And then after the contract is signed, the actual document, there is a continuation of conversation about are we on track? Are we sticking to it? And if not, what do we need to change? So for me, the contracting conversation is as important, if not more important, than the document itself, because it gets you to the document and it gets you to revising the document. Let's see, I like to tell stories about where I've gone wrong with this. So, one was with a client where we contracted for two phases of work. And the first phase of work, we were really clear on how we would work together, what the outcome would be, and we were very clear, especially about our relationship and the fact that we were stewards of a process. They were the decision makers. We were going to be helping them come to an agreement on what the purpose of their organization is, but that we would not have a stake in that purpose. It is theirs to create. We are going to help them have the tough conversations, et cetera, et cetera. And then we had a pause and we reconnected, and they said, okay, now that we've done the purpose work, we want to design the organization to achieve this purpose. And we didn't start at the beginning of the contracting conversation again. We said, okay, well, let's talk about the work for organization design now that we have a purpose. It would look like this, it would look like that. But we never talked about how our relationship would change. We never talked about what would be different between us, and that we would be more expert advisors in some instances and actually be giving them ideas to think about and be a little bit more directive. We didn't prepare them for what it would feel like to do an assessment. We said we needed to do an assessment, and they said, well, if that's what we need to do, that's great. They listened, but they didn't know why. And that was, it led to actually the assessment being the last piece of work we did with them, because they got the assessment, they got some proposed next steps, and they said, this isn't what we thought we were going getting into. And if they didn't like the assessment, I would say that's fine, and I wouldn't take it personally. But saying we didn't know what we were getting into, I take that personally. That is a failure on my part. And that's why the contracting conversation is so important, because the document isn't going to say, here's everything you're getting into. And even a proposal won't give full understanding of everything you're getting into. But those conversations and the and what you say explicitly to your client is something that they're going to remember. So
Julie,
that's my history there with the
so
conversation.
I have an e experience about that explicit understanding. My first contact with Department of Homeland Security, I was a subcontractor for a sizable consultancy, and the document was clear, signed, very well negotiated. Everything was laid out, and there was a set of deliverables, which were great, and we delivered all those. And the client came back and said, you're not finished yet. You haven't documented your results. And I said, what about that 150-page report that we just submitted that has everything we did and recommendations? And he said, that's not what we mean by document. We have a specific format. It's got to go through approvals and endorsements, and you've got to shepherd this through the process, which was like, oh, would have been, and it's we didn't know what we didn't know. And that's an example of where I now explore a little bit more some of those words like document, process, et cetera.
Right. And Rich, I think that goes to this last bullet here on the slide, which is to be explicit and don't assume you understand each other. Words mean something unique to each organization. So if an organization is using the word operating model, Harris, I think this is directed at you. And don't assume you know what they mean. When they say we want an operating model design, don't just say, great, here's how I would do it. Say, well, what is an operating model to you? And what would a new operating model get you? And really interrogate the terminology, I think is important here. So Kate, the proposal and considerations. You're on mute.
Thank you. Sorry. Let's talk about what happens when you do start getting stuff on paper. And, when I think about a contract or a proposal, this is really, in my mind, the formalization of helping your client understand how you want to be treated, right, in the relationship, and how you're going to treat them. And so this is really how you spell out the terms that you have, right? And so the things that I include in my proposals, and I, again, I've been doing this for a really long time, and I have a way of doing this that I feel works great now. So I always start with the brief. And what I might mean by that is, what is the client hoping to solve? Because again, it does two things. One, it helps your client feel like you really understand them, you get them, and you know what they're after. And I take copious notes from when we have the contracting conversation, the initial kind of getting to know you call, right? So that I can have really great things and use their words to the extent that I am able to do. So, this shared understanding is one thing, but it also makes sure that, again, like Julian and Rich were talking about, that you're aligned on the same issue. So you're aligned and they heard you, because clients love to hear themselves talk about stuff. So that brief is really important, and that introduces the rest of the things that go in the proposal. And then I talk about what they get. So, what kind of deliverables have we agreed to? What does the time frame look like that we're going to do them? And one of the things that I do in terms of time frame, because I've been around the block, all these things are things that I had to learn the hard way, just by the way. But with time frames, when I spell out kind of my process and recommendations around how we should move through the process, I always talk about it in terms of like week one or month one, not January 1st, right? Because sometimes it takes a little while for them to get their act together. And I always ask for money up front, which we'll talk about again in terms, but sometimes it takes a while for them to cut that first check. And so I don't want to be held to an end date of, August. If I put the thing together in May and said that we're going to start in May, and we don't actually start until the middle of July, right? Because once you give them an end date, that's when they start anchoring to that end date. So do yourself a favor and don't give them specific dates unless they're required by the kind of contract. And then even if they are, if you're required to do something like that, I would always put some sort of disclaimer, timeline, depending on, estimated based on a start date of March 31st, right? Something like that. So deliverables, time frame, and resources. This last piece is important, that they know what they have to come up with, right? And typically what I do in this piece is talk about, the time that it's going to take, that we're going to meet weekly, or we're going to meet semi-monthly, with a project team, that we need an advisory group to help, or steering committee to help, shepherd the project, or that we're going to need to, collect a lot of information and data from the company. So we need to be upfront about that. It's just important that they know that they need to be producing things or offering things too, that this is not just something that once they sign the contract, you go away and do all the things and then come back with a finished product, right? That we're not a bakery. We're not going to do this in our own kitchen and then come back with a cake for them. So what they get is deliverables, time frame, and resources. And then we get into the terms. So a lot of people, when they think about proposal, they're just thinking about terms. Terms are very, very important, so don't skip this part. But again, how your client should treat you, right? So what are your payment terms? Are you a net zero? Are you net 30? Do you give them a, it's net 90 and you give them a discount for paying earlier? You have to decide what your payment terms are. I have a philosophy of getting them to give me money up front. And I generally do between 20 and 30% upfront, depending on the size of the contract. The larger the contract, the less I require upfront. And I do this for a couple of different reasons. One, I don't like to work for free. And so getting money upfront helps me, if I need to invest in, purchasing a data set or doing something that requires me to, get a contractor in to help do some work or whatever. I am not like ponying up my money and then waiting for their first check to clear, right? And it also gives them, if they're required to put some money up front, I find that they're generally a little bit better about getting those first meetings on the calendar and everything because they've committed in a financial way, right? I also, for my larger contracts, what I do, 20% upfront for the very large ones, and then I'll divide up the remaining 80% into monthly payments. So, if we're gonna have something that is over the course of 8 months, then they pay the 20% upfront and then 10% each month for those 8 months that we anticipate being involved in the project. And, I do this for a number of different reasons. One, because it helps me with cash flow and I don't have to wait until the end of the project to get my money, which I like. And it, again, that's that regular commitment, financial commitment that the client is making to the project, which I think is really important. And it helps them with their cash flow stuff too. So that's what I think about in terms of payment terms. Cancellation terms, this is another, I had to learn this the hard way. And I had somebody tell me one time that the things that make you craziest about your clients are things that you need to have a system or process for. And this is one of those things. So I had a client and love this client. And we worked, what we were working on is a team building session. And which sounds very vague, but we had, they had an offsite and it was a full day. I was managing the full day for them in terms of, activities and, outcomes and all this kind of stuff. And we spent 2 months getting everything set up. And, I got all of the materials for some exercises and stuff. And less than 24 hours before we were supposed to have our big day, they canceled it. Less than 24 hours, which, again, never before, never since. It probably was sent from heaven to give me a process, but I didn't have anything in my contract that said anything about cancellations. So, in the mind of the corporation, I hadn't done the work. But in reality, I had spent a couple of months and all these meetings and stuff preparing for it. I finally decided that I was going to bill them for half of it because I didn't have anything and they could decide to not pay it at all. And they did pay it, and that was fine. But now I have a very explicit cancellation policy where, if they cancel more than 90 days in advance, then, they get all of their money back. And, if it's, the closer it gets, the more, I think it's now 2 weeks in advance, then they owe me the whole thing, even if we don't do it. So, super important to put those things in. And it protects you as well, right? Revisions is the next piece that I generally put into my proposals and my consulting agreements. This is really important, especially, again, learned this the hard way. If you have a client that likes to revise and revise and revise and revise, if you don't specify, like I often do as a part of my contracts, I often do communications and training documentation, right? So so we'll put together a manager training and stuff, but I specify in there that, you know, up to two rounds of revisions, right? And you know, people will blow by that and everything. There's part of them that's going to internalize that as they're going through it. Two rounds of revisions is enough for like most normal clients. If they want to go on an adventure of a million zillion revisions, they're welcome to do that. And I charge them for that, right? So revisions is an important thing. And it's especially important, you know, depending on the kind of work that you do. But, you know, again, set the expectations for how you want to be treated. And then the last thing is client contracts. So I have my own contracts that I've developed over the course of time, and, you know, that have been reviewed by my attorney, which you need to have one and you need to use them for this kind of stuff. But sometimes I have clients that want me to sign their contract. And I remember the first time I had a contract like that, and it came from a client that I eventually worked with for like over 2 years, and, you know, loved working with them. But the contract that they sent me freaked me out, you know, and I looked at it, and I was like, wow, I can't sign this, because there was all kinds of stuff in there basically saying that anything that I developed or anything that they used of mine was theirs from an IP perspective. And I was like, wow, no, you know, because I have my own methodology that I use, and I want to use that with all my clients. Oh, and they said that they could monetize the stuff that I have. And, you know, I don't want them taking my stuff and then selling my stuff, because that's not cool, right? And so I was all freaked out about it. And I talked with a friend of mine who is a consultant as well. And she's like, oh, you know, you can redline that. Just, you know, send it to your attorney and redline it, which means make edits to it, and then send it back. So I was immediately relieved. I didn't know that you could do that. I thought you just had to sign what they sent you. But you don't. You can redline it, which is what we did, and took out all of that stuff about they own my IP and all that kind of stuff. And they were happy to sign the redline version, went through really quickly. But be aware that the contracts that are going to come to you from corporations are going to be written to advantage the corporation 100% of the time. So that's their job. And, you know, it's stupid, it doesn't make sense, but your job is to make sure that whatever winds up into that ultimate contract, it's something that you can live with. So so that's, you know, that's kind of the terms. I put NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, at the end here. You know, I have in my contract something about, you know, I will hold all the stuff that you know, that you share with me confidential and not share it with other people, right? Unless we both agree. And that's, you know, that's generally enough to satisfy my clients, but sometimes they want you to sign a very specific non-disclosure agreement. You know, again, this is something that you want to make sure that you're going over with your attorney and making sure that you can live with the terms that are in their non-disclosure agreement, and to be really aware of how this stuff works, because sometimes, you know, it may make it so that you want them to hold all of the data and information in servers that they own, and then you are granted access to them. And that's generally how I work with my clients, because I work with a lot of employee data. And that way it's like, I don't have to worry about all of that stuff. They can shut down access whenever they want, and their security people feel good about it. So again, know what you're signing if you're going to sign stuff, but know what you're asking other people to sign, and make sure that whatever you come up with helps amplify the kind of relationship that you want to have with your clients. So on that note,
I think we're going to go into some breakout groups. So if you're off camera, please come on camera. Because our assumption here is that you know as much about this, if not more than we do. So what can you share with each other? We've set a framework, we've set some basics. So having you connect with each other is part of the goal here. So we'll do about 15 minutes for breakouts and 15 minutes to share the top tips that you received in your breakouts. And we'll share our top tips.
All right, give me 1 second because we just had a few people drop off, so my room's got unbalanced. Okay, here you
Julian,
go.
Can you? Oh, we're going.
Oh, just no, I didn't hit yet.
I just wanted to clarify what's the ask for the breakout group and how much time do we have?
You have 15 minutes and the ask is for you to share your top tips so that you can reflect a bit on what you heard here, but we would like you to bring back your top tips on contracting. The idea here is that you've all had some experience of this.
And in particular, if there are things that you think are important that we didn't mention, we would really like to hear that.
And if you wind up with a bunch of questions, feel free to record those too, and we'll talk about them when you come back.
Yeah.
All right.
I think I had a back button, Tanya. My mistake.
Try clicking down by where you would say end and see if it gives you the option to rejoin.
I don't have an end thing here. I just have a leave button. So can you place me? Or?
Well, it's still showing you as placed in the room. Try hitting the multi-dot button for more and see if it gives you an option to join.
The multi-dot is here.
Okay. More, like more.
Choose virtual. No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Oh, what did I do?
It's okay. I'm going to move you to a room and then I'll move you back into this one. And so you're going to zip in and zip out a couple times.
No worries. Thank you. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Maybe I did it too fast. Hold on again.
I think that was.
Okay. Yes, where the laundry room is. The laundry room. Hold on a second.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Just curious, like, what's present right now? What did people hear or say that you'd like to bring back to the group?
Hey, Kate, I'm happy to share.
Thanks, Jody.
My takeaway, and thanks to my group, was, you know, just ask. Because being able to explain to a client what you need. And we particularly had a conversation around asking for payment up front, or asking for terms that allow you to well, basically to be paid, because sometimes you end up in a situation where you start some work and 3 months later, you're still chasing your first payment. And that's not a realistic way to do business. So yeah, so that was my inspiration.
Love it.
You know, I think there's a lot of wisdom in application of these principles. And I was saying in our group that I'm guilty of not following my own rules so often. And I think Kate, you and Rich, you made reference to that stuff. We've all learned the hard way. You know, I've been in this business for 30 years. I should have known better. I made some mistakes last week against many of these principles. Having said this, I think there is also, there's some gut sense that we've got. So sometimes it is okay to bypass our own protocols when you know that, you know, it would be just worth making an investment. And the example I'm using is, I've found that, you know, facilitating a session can often lead to great things. And many clients, because they haven't seen the value, push back on that stuff. I went to a session in Toronto last week where I had no contract. And maybe I shouldn't have done this, but I knew once I got in the room that some things will happen. So then you just make a conscious decision as a business development thing. And don't become so dogmatic about these things that you sort of miss the forest from the trees.
Beautifully said.
Just follow on from there, Kate, if that's okay. We have a phrase, Harris, that, you know, we know you're good for it, means we're doing this for nothing at this point in time because we have a trusted relationship with you. And it's a psychological contract when we say that, like, we know you're good for it. We expect you to pay us for this at some point soon. But for now, we haven't had time to deal with contracts. From our group, I mean, really, some really generous thoughts were shared. So thank you to those people. One question that came up, I'm curious about knowing more how people handle IP and IP situations. So Kate, you referenced it as part of the, as an example of what might be in a client's contract that you need to redline and review. But just generally, it's kind of an open question to the room. What experiences do we have where we could have found ourselves in tricky positions? And it could be anything. So it could be, I don't know, maybe an article got written for LinkedIn or something. You know, what do you want for that? You want to have your name credited, maybe. Or it could be an actual model that was produced as part of the work. And then what happens to it afterwards? Who owns it? How much of that can you prepare for? How much do you have to have conversation in the moment? And then I'm sure other thoughts riffing off that.
So one thing that I will tell you from that I know from my attorney in the US is that there's a difference in terms of who owns the IP between whether you're a worker under contract versus a consultant, right? A consultant owns the IP that they produce, but a work for hire person does not. They're more like a W-2 employee. A W-2 employee, anything you produce is owned by the company, which can include stuff that you do on your own time. So, you know, be really careful when you're signing employment agreements. That's just a little sign aside. But but knowing that, you know, just be really clear. Because if you're creating a model based off of the things that you're doing, they don't own that. But, you know, generally what I put in my contract is that they can have, you know, things that we worked on together, they can have use of those in perpetuity, right? But they're mine. So curious as to what other folks think. Alistair, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, well, we've always taken, and you may laugh at this and say it's very naive, as a consultancy, we've never sought to impose IP on anyone, right? Because we basically say all the stuff we're doing is building on the shoulders of giants. We don't deliberately try and ever protect IP in our contracts. What we've got to be careful of is that if we take stuff in and we're not trying to protect the IT, the client then tries to grab the IT, you know, not deliberately through the way their contract works and says, oh, anything you've done with us, et cetera, or anything novel we've created. So that's where you have to be careful, where they may, in a sense, be trying to effectively pinch your IP, particularly if, like us, you're not trying to protect it, because I kind of don't believe in it as a principle, if we're honest. But you may say that's naive. So, but you still got to be wary of it as to what they put in the contract that governs the work you do.
I think when doing, for me, when doing design work, so much of what we do is there's kind of two different pieces of IP. There's models which have been published and are public or are protected. And if they want to, you know, use those and cite those appropriately, I'm doing no different, so go for it. And then there's the client-specific work that is the application of those models and methods. And there, I feel that there's a sense that if it's for their organization, they do own that for themselves. I think what Kate is talking about is if you create a new model for that piece of work, and it may be Seema, that's what you're talking about too. And there, I do think it's worth saying that models created together or as part for this work exclusively are owned by the consultant because you've created them, but that the client can use them because you've left them with a deliverable that now includes this. So they have to be able to use it internally at least.
Julian, I love how you, because my question was running to a piece of org design work we did with a client where some of that wraparound, some of that process, it could actually, the whole thing could be IP'd and could be sold out into the marketplace or replicated if people from this client went and worked for another client. So what we did a bit around, and we explained it, and we charged a higher price for the content we were creating for them, because we weren't going to charge them an annual licensing fee or, you know, per use fee on it. It made it very clear that they would use it internal for them and not to be used elsewhere. So yeah, I loved how you described it though.
Thank you. I'd love to get to some of the top tips we put together. And maybe Kate, you can take us through these.
Yeah, some of these things that we've already talked about, you know, this top tip, the number one, you know, choose language carefully. You know, again, you don't want to go crazy on every single word, but, you know, Rich was referring to this earlier, you know, make sure that if you're saying a report and they're saying, you know, a report, that you know what that means and have shared understanding. Don't use consulting-y, you know, buzzwords and stuff. Make sure that it's kind of how they speak as much as you can. The biggest thing about these things is making sure that you have shared understanding. You know, are you seeing the problem in the same way? Are you seeing the solution in the same way? Are you seeing the work in the same way? Are you seeing the terms of the contract in the same way? help your clients do the right thing, right? This is not, you know, it shouldn't be focused on, you know, punishing them for doing the wrong thing, but really helping them understand, hey, this is how we do it, right? So spell things out and make sure that they know what they're supposed to do at the same time. I love this next one, continuously check in. So, you know, your proposal is not just, you know, hey, here's a snapshot and we're never going to look back at it. Kind of refer back to it, make sure that things are going along the way that you say that you're going to approach them, make sure that the client's doing what they said that they would do. And then recontract if you need to, you know, say, hey, look, you know, we said up front that this was part of the agreement was that we were going to have Monthly steering committee meetings, that hasn't materialized yet. What needs to happen instead, right? And if your client wants changes, sometimes we get into it and the client decides that they, you know, they want to do something else, or they, you know, all of a sudden say that they want to pay less. I've never had that happen, but I could imagine it happening. But if they want to change things, if they want to expand the scope, or if they want to add something, or, you know, oh my gosh, well, we can't really do this until we've done this other analysis, make sure that you are charging for any additional deliverables that you're offering. Because it, again, you know, you need to show them how to treat you. They may think it's fine to ask for stuff, and you can say, yeah, it's fine to ask for stuff. And, you know, if we're going to do an analysis that's additional to, you know, out of scope of this first thing, let's talk about what that would cost before you enter into it. Right. And then, you know, lowering price by changing the scope instead of just doing it for less. Very key.
So. Yeah. This has been so much fun to have you all here diving into this topic with us. It's one that I think is worth visiting and revisiting as we go in our careers and as we get more experience. And I think we're here with a lot of different levels of experience. And I think there's some great ideas here that we didn't have, which is part of why we do it this way, because we are starting a conversation. We are not giving an expert webinar. So our next topic is going to be about staffing. It will be in 3 months, and we will look kind of at it in a couple of different parts. There's how do you build your network so that you have the people you can staff? How do you staff quickly for projects as they come in? And then how do you, you know, keep those relationships warm and ongoing in between the times you work together? So
and during the time that you work together, yes.
And yes, and how to actually work together. This Kate has pointed out to me many times. Please join us. That'll be in 3 months. So we'll be looking at fall at that point. Have a great summer. Tanya, anything else we need to announce?
I don't think so, other than just appreciations again to the three of you for putting this information together and for starting the conversation. Thank you very much. We'll have, I think, and Julian, I think our next event for the month will be Julian's Coffee Club coming up here in 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about hierarchy and alternatives to hierarchy.
Good. That promotion will come out sometime today. Now that you shared the topic with us.
I emailed you the promotion earlier, so you had it.
You did, yeah. But it's early in my morning when we get these started, so
yeah.
I'll get that sent out. And as always, we've got a group of volunteers who help plan and organize these virtual offerings. So we've got a couple other ones scheduled that'll be coming up over the summer. But if you have a topic you're curious about or would like to consider sharing some information and coordinating one of these virtual sessions, please reach out and we'll get you connected with the folks who do all the planning. So thank you, everyone. Stay cool. 114 looking at me here in 2 days. So I'm hunkering down inside, and I hope everyone is doing well.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye, guys.